Well, hello, everybody. Today is Saturday, June 13th, 2020. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We are not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. And thank you for joining us today. My name is Carol Worlius, and my associate, Jim Knox, and I have these calls every second and fourth Saturday of the month. These calls are recorded and available on our website, www.indicatorinformation.com, iqtcalls.com, and YouTube. As we get closer and closer to our expected RV, we thought this would be a good time to review our common law contract trust and why we think it is the best vehicle for you to protect your assets. As always, your questions are welcome. You star six to raise your hand. Jim, is there anything you'd like to say before we get started?
No, I think that we're going to have a great call. We just need to make sure everybody understands that there are certain things we just don't know. You know, don't ask us about when the timing of the RV is. We don't know.
Other than that,
let's just go for it.
Okay. Well, you're all here because you know this is a trust call. And Jim and I have been doing these for quite some time now, and maybe for Jim. So anyway, we have been involved in creating trust for asset protection since the late 80s for Jim, early 90s for myself, and early 80s for my mentors. What assets did we protect? And that's quite simple. Equity of value, residential and commercial real estate, family farms, businesses, business property, investments, personal property, etc. For most of you, the term asset protection has not been on your radar until you became engaged in possible revaluation of Dinar, Don, Zoom, etc. And that possible revaluation appears to be very close. Appears. Now, we've all heard or read other things, many things regarding this RV. We will probably have to sign an NDA, meaning we cannot talk about Dinar, Don, Zoom, etc., RV, revaluation, global currency reset, GCR, or anything remotely tied to it. Most of us have cover stories to explain our windfall when it happens. When it is time to make an announcement, we will be referring to this event as our motorhome event or motorhome or event. If Trump can refer to motorhome by saying RV five times in a press conference, we can certainly use the opposite. We've been told we will receive 800 numbers to call for an appointment. You may be wondering if you will get that call or email. For what I can surmise, Wells Fargo will be sending emails out to about 527,000 people. Several years ago, there were groups put together who were promised higher rates than the screen rate. At first, the group was known as General 64 or Sublease Group, which has since been absorbed by Wells Fargo. So now it is known as the Wells Fargo Group. I'm sure there may be others. You cannot join a group now, to my knowledge. If you join any of those groups, you probably supplied your email address. I'm surmising that currency dealers turned over their customer databases to Wells Fargo as well in an effort to reach as many people as possible. So if you don't get this call and you think you should, do not call a bank. Do not call Wells Fargo. Those in the retail side of the bank will have no knowledge of this. Or no knowledge that they can admit to, put it that way. We are all awaiting 800 numbers or some notification that it's a go. Well, we will not post any 800 numbers on our website. We will advise you of the fact that they are out and share with you some websites that will be posting those numbers. We will not be calling or mailing individuals with this information. As you might guess, we have quite a few clients, and we're not going to be calling 1,000 clients just to say, check your email. So Jim and I have been very open about the fact that we'll be taking some time off immediately post-RV. We do have trained staff that will complete your trust, but they are word processors and will not be able to answer or not be able or available to answer your questions. We will endeavor to answer all of your emails as time permits. Recently, Nick Fleming, one of the so-called gurus, has said that he will go dark for the 90-day NDA period. And you know, Jim and I are considering that as well. So, you know, as members, you all have access to our website, which should answer most of your questions about trust. Jim has put in a lot of time and effort to keep the website viable and is adding to it on a regular basis. While we realize It's often easier to pick up the phone and ask a question rather than search for it. We would like you to research it first. The website was designed to be a resource for you and a respite for us. As you might guess, we are pretty busy right now, so please check the website first. And before I get into asset protection, I got a couple of hands raised here.
Okay, well, I need to make a comment real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so here's what we're going to do, folks. As we get information, it will be added to the website. Most of you have been on the website. You know that I've got the recents up there, the new stuff. As we learn more over the next 4 or 5 weeks, even post-RV, I will be adding a lot of content to the website. You go to the website and you do the research. Go to the tab where we're talking about new stuff. I'm pulling it up right now. Bear with me. My memory is full. I jokingly tell people my file cabinet between my ears is full and cluttered. So there's a tab called New. You just click on the New, and then I have to log in. My bad. Okay, and that's another point. This is a members-only website. Do not give out your username and password to anybody. We find you doing that, you will be banned. We've been hacked too many times to take any chances. But anyway, you just go to the New tab, and you'll find all the new stuff that we'll be adding every day, every week. It's going to be a lot. I will add a lot of stuff post-RV. That said, continue, my friend.
Okay, good. Okay, so we did have a wireless caller. Last four numbers are 7093. Hello, whoever you are.
Yes, ma'am. How do I get on the website first?
Do you have a trust with us now?
I do. I have two of them.
Okay. Well, why don't you drop me, either me or Jim, an email after the call, and we'll send you an invite code?
Okay. Yeah.
Let me explain what we're talking about here. Sir, just a second. What we're going to do is we're going to send you a one-time code that you use to register for the website, and then you will get an email, automatic email, back with your password. You'll have to create a username and so on and so forth. When your password gets in, then you need to have something that's going to be very complicated password. We suggest using RoboForm. Once you get that, you can log in as many times as you want, as often as you want, and look around the website.
Okay. What email should I send, should I use to ask?
Send it to security@indicatorinformation.com. And that's me. And I'll take care of that. I'll get you in there today.
Okay, security@indicatorinformation.com. .com. Okay.
And put your full name, and if you can remember what the name of your trust were, we'd appreciate that too.
I can do that. Okay, I've been remiss in not doing anything. My trusts are not active, if that's the right word. Am I in trouble with that? I haven't done any minutes. I haven't done any kind of yearly upkeep fees. What do I need to do to get up to speed?
You are in so much trouble, I can't believe it.
I can believe that.
you've got no problems. Get with me,
okay,
and I'll walk you through the process. We're just going to have to go back and do the year minutes, just a simple minute for each year that you didn't do anything. It says, the trust sat dormant, we didn't know nothing, yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. And you sign it, and you add it to the binder, and you do that for each one of the years, and then away you go. You're fine. You're absolutely fine.
Okay. Is there any kind of yearly payment I should be making to one of the states or something on this?
No.
No.
This is a contract between me, myself, and I. This is private.
Okay.
We're not in party to this.
Great. Okay. I've learned from one of the other sites, and I know you hate to hear that. Somebody had said about that a trust can only put in $50 million. After that, it's taxable. Is that correct?
I don't know. And let me tell you why I don't know. Because there is nobody that's ever been able to answer any questions. Now, think this through with me, folks. Have you ever got a document or anybody from the government even validates this RV? No. So I don't think that's correct. I mean, do you think that Uber Wealthy will let that happen? I don't think so. So
yeah, I don't think
you're going to be playing in a brand new ball field here. This is going to be totally different than anything you've ever done. I don't think that's true. If that is true, multiple trusts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I heard it also from others. I'm always asking the same question, yet I've never seen or heard that in anything even close to official. I don't believe it is. I don't believe that is true.
You probably know who it comes from. Seems to be very knowledgeable in setting up trusts, and that was just stated. And I won't say the name if you don't want me to. So anyway, now the interest is the interest earned in the trust, even though the trust doesn't use it; it just sits in the bank account and accrues. Is that taxable?
To my knowledge,
it can be, but remember now, you have to be careful when you do this. We don't know exactly what the new banking system is going to look like. We hear rumors that the QFS banking system is going to do some things different. But for me, I'm not going to have an account. My mother load, for an example, is not going to draw any interest. It's a non-interest-bearing account. The issue is that is if you have interest-bearing account, where do they get that money to give you? Well, they use your money speculating, and then it's in danger as far as I'm concerned. Because remember, we call them banksters for a reason. So I don't have anything set up for interest-bearing accounts at all. I will make my money on my investments, and yes, they will be taxable. But I don't plan on allowing the bank to use my money to go make them money. And, you know, well, they'll make 12%, give me a 0.5%.
Yeah, really?
No, I'm not going to do that. No interest-bearing accounts at the bank. That's my opinion, just an opinion.
I got you. Okay. So it has been stated that if, in fact, this is a non-taxable event, do you think some of it should be used, should some of it be set aside, not put in the trust, so that you can use that for just personal items like groceries or, you know, buying a bicycle or something like that, that the trust perhaps would not be involved in?
Carol, go ahead with that one, and then I'll follow up on it.
Okay. My screen just went away. I lost my train of thought.
Okay. Well, let me jump in there real quick.
Go ahead.
Okay, so here's the deal. Anything that you put in the trust is owned by the trust, and you're simply the manager.
Sure.
I have multiple trusts. I have real estate trust set up. I have automobile trust set up. I have a management trust set up. I have my mother load trust set up. And so what I'm doing is I'm taking and earmarking certain amounts of currency for my one of my automobile trusts, for example. And then I'm going to contract the mother load to exchange that. And then the instructions are, once it's exchanged, place it on behalf of the automobile trust into the management trust, so the management trust can pay the bills. And then at that point, you have a discretionary account. You can go buy anything you want. You know, you have a business account, you'll have a personal account, so on and so forth. I'm going to pay myself a certain amount of money every month to go buy those little things that don't need to go in the trust, and I may pay a little bit of taxes on that. I may, depends on how the structure is set up. I don't mind doing that. I don't want them to think that I'm not, you know, that I'm absconding with their money and I'm, you know, I'm a terrible person not paying taxes and evading taxes. No, I'm avoiding taxes. Avoiding taxes is legal. Evading taxes, well, they'll put you in jail.
Right.
So structure your life and realize that you still have to pay the law for something.
I would agree. Yeah, the way you're going to get walking around money or grocery money is pay yourself a salary. If you have to pay tax about it, you pay tax about it. I totally agree with Jim on that one.
Okay. I know at one point Jim had said that he did have CPA, attorney, et cetera, type people, but he didn't want to tell us who they were so they wouldn't be swamped. Are there going to be some of those people that you're going to let us know about?
No.
I do have the names of a few of those people. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. No, we don't plan on doing that. What we will do is allow you to submit your name that you're interested and have them contact you directly. So, because we do not want to be self-serving and I look like a conflict of interest. However, I will say this. If things go as they are rumored, remember, we don't know. We've never seen a document. If they go as rumored, you'll have wealth managers that you can rely on to lead you to those people.
Exactly.
So when you go into the bank, you're going to have enough, if you have a decent amount of currency, you'll have enough money where the wealth managers for Wells Fargo, it's Abbott Downing, as we understand it, they're going to offer you all kinds of benefits and services if you will use them. Well, you got to be careful with that. I'm going to use them initially, but I'm going to reserve my final judgment of which one I'm going to use until I get experience with them and then go look at some other ones. You've got to go out and look around. You need this one first just to get established. You can switch. You know, this is one thing that you can change horses in midstream. You just fire them and go hire somebody else.
Yeah. My concern was in trying to find somebody that understands non-statutory and irrevocable. I know attorneys would like to steer you toward statutory type instruments, and I just wanted to get somebody who really knows about your trusts or the at least the basis of them. So that's where I was going with that.
Well, I'm sure that some of these wealth management companies, when they meet our people, will want to know more about us, and we will work with them.
Okay.
That's not a problem. I'm looking forward to educating some of these people. Because you're right, they're going to lead you down that other path, and we don't want to go down that. And Carol knows me well enough to know that I'll have a heyday with that one.
Yeah.
Yes, you would. Yes, you would. Anything else?
Okay. I'm sorry. I scribbled that first information you gave me on how to contact you, and I can't read my writing. Would you give that to me one more time?
Sure. security@indicatorinformation.com. And you had great
questions.
Okay,
I got this time. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well,
thank
you.
Okay,
bye
now.
Bye.
Okay, we have another wireless caller. Last four numbers are 7218.
Hey, Carol. Hey, Jim. This is Jamal. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing well, Jamal. How about yourself?
I'm doing super fantastic. Hey, on the last call, Jim, you had told me to get in touch with you because I wanted access to the website because I've got some forms I need to get sample of. And you told me to send you an email, which I did, but I never heard back from you.
I didn't get an email. If you did, I'm looking at my email right now. I have nothing. So send it to me again because evidently, yeah, we have had some issues. I'm on Comcast. I don't know if you know that. Comcast is not a great company. And we did have we had one of those transformers on the telephone post blew up here the other day, and we lost internet, we lost power, and it scrambled a bunch of stuff. And I'm still working to get my Comcast system back up and working well, so that could be part of the problem. Just send me another one, and I'll do it today.
All right, let me make sure I got it right. It's security@indicatorinformation.com.
That's it. Send it to me today, and I'll work on it today. Apologize I didn't get back to you, but I don't have any record of getting it.
Okay, I'll do that. All right, my second question is for both of you, or if any one of you, you all know this. Hey, I was looking for somebody to create a foundation for me, but I would like to have it created in trust form. Do you know anybody like that?
It's not hard to do, but we won't do it. Let me explain you what I mean by that. To create a foundation, a 501c3, we have one. Carol and Jay have put one together, and I'm a member of it. And it took them a long mm-hmm. time to put it together, and it's not easy. But remember now, you can do anything with a corporation. And if you want to put together a nonprofit corporation, it's you get the corporation and then you apply to the IRS for the designation of being a nonprofit. It's the same with the trust.
Mm-hmm.
You get the trust set up and then you apply to them. They'll ask you a bunch of questions, a bunch of phone calls go back and forth. It'll take three, sometimes months to get that thing. So just because you get an EI number for a 501c3, it doesn't mean you're a 501c3, but you haven't got the acceptance from the Internal Revenue Service. So I have somebody that tells me, well, I got a 501c3 EI number, so I have a 501c3 foundation. No, you don't. You have an EI number attached to some company, but you've not got permission, nor do you have the documentation to verify that you've been accepted and that you can actually accept money and give a receipt, and it's not taxable. So you've got to go through the process, and it's a lengthy process, but not difficult. Mm-hmm. So that's why
I would agree.
We'll help you get started.
Yeah. It's very paper intensive.
Okay.
Cool. I know when Jay and I put ours together years ago, it took a long time for both of us because the application, I think, just the application is about 8 pages blank. And then, of course, you've got to fill everything out for the past 4 years, blah, blah, blah. So that's where that is. So that's why we don't do them.
Okay. Well, that's all I have for now. Appreciate your help. And, Jim, I'll send you another email on that.
All right. Thank you very much. And I'll get right on it today.
Okay.
All right. Thanks,
Jamal. Appreciate it. Thank you. All righty. Thank you, Karen. All right.
You're welcome. Okay. Another wireless call. And four numbers ending in 4989.
Hi, guys. Georgine from Mid-Tennessee. And
hi.
A while ago, and sometimes my connection here is a little fuzzy, you talked about the where we have our trust, and I did get a coupon saying that from Wyoming that my trust, I need to pay a yearly due. Is that the one that's still working, or is that the one that went out of business?
What's the address?
It's the one in Wyoming.
Evanston? Well, I know, but there's two. There's Evanston and Cheyenne.
It's Evanston.
It sounds to me like it would be the Cheyenne one if they're looking for a renewal fee.
So, again, the Cheyenne one is the one that I want?
No.
The Cheyenne one is the one. They're the ones that went out of business.
Okay.
So... whatever they sent you, they're probably looking for money to renew the mailbox, which they no longer have. So I would disregard it because the trust itself does not have any annual payments to anybody.
Now, let me jump in real quick. If you had it in Cheyenne, you need to change the address to either the Evanston one or some other state that you can use. We use Washington. Carol and I both have ours, Harvard. I live in Salem, Oregon. My stuff is Harvard in Vancouver, Washington. Hers is Harvard in Kirkland, Washington. So you need to, and we have those addresses available on our website. So you can go get an account set up with them. And the one that I use in Vancouver, they're just great people. They got two little boys running around there in white shirts and little ties and helping everybody. They're 16 years old. They're just dolls. They're so much fun to be around. And they do a great job. They keep you informed.
Okay, and then I cannot get into the new website. Am I looking for something? So I just do send you an email and then go from there.
Yeah. Were you ever to get in? Could get in it?
Yes, I did. I did, and I can't for some reason. I can't get in.
Well, send me your email to security indicator information, and I'll see what I can do about that. I need to know your username and your email that you use to get that so I can locate you, and I'll go in and see what's going on. Generally what happens is nothing's changed, but these passwords are very, very long and convoluted, and that's why we try and get everybody to use this little program called RoboForm. There's a free version. And we can't change the strength of the password. As a matter of fact, I've hired the company that made the program. They're going to eliminate that part of the deal where you can, change your password. Because people do that, and here's what happens, folks. You'll try and go in and make it an easier password, and I understand that you want to do that. But if it does not qualify according to the program we set up, it's not strong enough, it'll refuse you. So then you try it again. After the third time, you're thrown out, and then you got to contact me. And then I will give you a brand new, very long, very convoluted, very difficult to remember password.
Okay.
Remember, folks, we've been hacked recently. Go ahead.
That's probably what happened, because I tried three times, and then, just because of the length of it and Ms. did it. And like, okay, good.
Yeah, well,
That's pretty easy.
Yeah, get the RoboFarm. It's free. And if you, there's links on our website about it. Even have links on training you how to use it on YouTube. It's a great. I've been using it for, I don't know, 10, 12 years, and I have over 500. I have multiple clients from multiple companies. 500 email addresses and usernames I have to remember. And my brain's not that big, so that's why I use RoboFarm.
Okay, great.
But we'll help you. Just get a hold of me, and I'll get it squared away.
Yeah, and there's a couple other issues, but that's I'm going to do through email, you know, not to waste your time today. And, you know, it's pretty
okay.
Okay?
All right.
Thank you.
All right, thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Bye-bye.
Jim, we get one more before we get out of the rest of the program. Hi, Todd.
Hi, Jim and Kerr. Yes, this is Todd. In regards to an EIN number associated with one of my trusts, the person who is like the sole owner of the trust has left it to me, and I was wondering, can I change the EIN number and keep the trust the same, or do I need to make maybe a sub page that would address the issue of a different EIN number? And could you just briefly go over what the EIN number does for us in regards to the trust name?
I need more information. Okay, now the person that was that got the EI number is no longer available.
Right.
Okay. So the trust is in that person's name as the trustee. They don't own it. They're just simply the trustee, and they are the basically they're the manager. So if you want to change that, I think we can get that done. There's a special form for that. You have to file quite a bit of documentation. The easiest thing to do is possibly just get a new EI number with you being the trustee and making a minute in the trust saying that the EI number has changed because of this purpose. Now, Carol, do you agree with that?
Yes. What I don't understand from the caller is the person who owns this trust or the person that's in charge, was this your trust to begin with?
Yeah, I did do multiple trusts, and the individual just has abandoned the situation. So I have two, one for myself, and then this one that I'm asking the question concerning.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes sense.
All right. Yeah,
but, yeah, I would agree with Jim. The easiest thing to do is going to be just get a new EIN.
And then establish it underneath the new trustee's name and make a minute that the former trustees left the corporation then? Or the
right. Aren't you the trustee of the trust?
Not at this time. The person's EIN number is in that person's name.
Well, okay, but let me re-ask the question. Okay, so you have these trusts, but you're not the trustee.
Correct.
Okay, well, that needs to be rectified. Okay,
yeah.
That's not a good way to sweep things. So we'll work with you. Send me an email, security indicator information, and I'll get back with you. Make sure you put your phone number on there, and I'll get back with you, and we'll solve your problem. But generally speaking, for the call, yes, we can help you with that, and probably the best thing is to get a new EI number. You got to make a you have to write kind of basically a little letter. It would be part of one of the minutes saying this is why we did it, and we did it. Now here's a new EI number, and then you're going to have to change the bank account because now it's a new EI number, and you're going to have a different trustee. The bank will still use you, or use the trust, will still, I shouldn't say use, they'll still work with the trust, but you're going to have to change the account.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
Get hold of me, and we'll work.
All right, I'll be in touch then. Thanks a lot, Jim.
Okay, yeah, and everybody that's going to be emailing me, let's get all this stuff done as soon as possible because I think that I maybe have to travel later this week, so I will dedicate this weekend to get everything current for everybody and just in case because I think we're in close. Let's put it that way. I just think everything's close. All right.
Okay.
Let's move forward.
All right, thank you. All right, so let's get back to trust and asset protection. Most statutory trusts are designed to provide for the logical distribution of your assets upon your death. Those assets will unfortunately go through probate and all the headaches involved with it, including making it public information. Our common law contract trust is designed to protect your assets while in life. It is totally private, managed by trustees, usually yourself, provides for the natural succession of trustees that you have appointed. And as we just mentioned, there's no, it's not registered anywhere. There's no need to pay any annual fees. You don't need a registered agent, except I believe in Nevada. But it's totally private. So over the years, we have discussed the need for trust and why we feel superior, excuse me, I'm losing my voice, why we feel it is superior to any other trust offering asset protection. We have referred to your first trust as the mother lode trust. It is the wellspring from which all other trusts are created and funded. We have talked about secondary trusts like management trusts, real estate trusts, vehicle trusts, etc. The mother lode trust functions much like the trunk of a tree with deep roots, and therefore the mother lode should be the most secure and private account that you set up. Jim, could you take over, please?
Sure.
Jim?
Never purchase anything from this account. Do not have bank cards or checks attached to this account, and never do online banking from this account. Most large deposits will be assigned a private banker. When you want to move money from your mother lode to your management trust, call your personal banker with instructions or go to see him and her and personally and then get that amount moved. If possible, simply walk to the bank and do it yourself. Like I was just saying, keeping up all communications of this account internal, you greatly reduce the risk of hackers penetrating your account where the bulk of your money is held. Here's a note on that. The mother lode trust should be banned from the bankers, other than the wealth managers, ever seeing it on their computers. You can tell them, I want this to be held private, only that I get to see it, and the personal banker gets to see it. I do not want to use for training purposes or examples. So you can ask for that, and they have to abide by that. So make sure you sell them this mother lode trust, this account, this amount of money, because you don't want those tellers seeing how many bazillions and gazillions of dollars in there. So
that's for
you
sure.
Want to keep that very secure. All right. Yeah. Never purchase anything. Where was that? Never purchase anything from this account. Do not have a bank. Did I just read that?
I think so.
No,
we're in number 10.
All right. We have, now I'm having trouble. We have spoken with many of you who wish to put your houses and even cars into the mother lode trust. We highly recommend against this practice. Real estate and vehicles are potentially the highest liability items. Put them in the same basket as the currency money puts everything at risk. You don't want to do that. That's why we offer real estate and vehicle trust. Here's a side note on that. If you have a home-based business and you're running it out of your house, you need to let your insurance company know because that's a different policy. It may cost you a bit more money, but you're covered. So if you have somebody coming to your house and they trip and fall and it's for business purposes, you may not be covered if you don't have that policy correct. All right. I have a friend that just went through that. Today, we would like to expand on the management trust concept, why it is important and how it interacts with your mother lode and other assets. Using a management trust can effectively shield the mother lode trust from any outside activity. This account will receive funds from your mother lode trust so it can function as your purchasing or lending arm. Hypothetically, it functions much like the branches of a tree. It has more exposure and is easier to break or penetrate. But it is an account that connects to some levels of the outside world, and it will not have the massive amounts of money that your mother lode trust will have. So place adequate funds in this account to easily cover your prospective purchases and to cover several outgoing expenses for easier manageability. You can also fund your personal checking account for daily and personal expenses. I've used one of my trusts for that, personally, how I do it. The management
that's all it does is handle our personal money. That's it.
Yep, that's all it does. It's set up with Wells Fargo, and I move money into it when I need to. It handles all my stuff. I go out to dinner, I go buy shoes, I put gas in my car, and then I have an accounting of everything. I keep my personal accounting. I keep my receipts, bring them home, ledger them, burn them. Okay. The management trust simplifies some of the issues associated with the multiple properties and multiple vehicles. Many of you are planning on purchasing multiple vehicles, more than one residence, rental properties, etc. Obviously, that may create an accounting nightmare, so we suggest to use the management trust. For instance, the management trust can pay all the taxes, insurance, and maintenance for all of the real estate, thus limiting the need for separate bank accounts for each piece of property. The same holds true for the vehicle trust. It's basically set up as an escrow company, folks. So whenever you make a house payment right now, in the standard situation, you're making a payment to an entity that will take and pay the principal, the interest, the taxes, and the insurance. Usually the taxes are prorated, and so is the insurance. So every month you're making that one payment. They separate it out. That's what your management company is going to do. It has money in there, and you separate it out. The automobile trust, you separate it towards the real estate trust, you separate it to your personal account, whatever you need from that. That's what its function is designed to do. This trust has full power to dispose of the properties and complete control over its management, such as paying insurance, just like I said, maintenance, repairs, upkeep, home, property, etc. As trustee, you will still control the assets in the trust and the income they produce. We can create management trust for you, including all steps to validate its creation and funding. Now, what I'd like to add to that is we also now are putting all the contracts together for you, sample contracts. I did it yesterday. Now, today, if you go to our website, I'm going to log here in a second, and I put on a whole bunch of new stuff. Just pardon me just a second here. You hear the clicking in the background, the mechanical keyboard. There we go. So I'm going to log in, and log in. So I'm in. Nope, it says my login failed. Well, I use RoboForm. Now, how does that? Oh, I know what I did. Never mind. My bad. I went in as in the wrong field as myself personally as a test account, not as the head honcho. My bad. So,
shame on you.
I know. I never said I was smart. All right, I'm pushing the buttons, and I'm in. Okay. So I'm on the new tab, and so it says Management Trust Information, June 2020 New Information. So when I click on that, you go there, and you'll see the Management Trust Information about how the trust is created, how to operate it, and then instructions. And then in there it talks about XYZ Real Estate or Vehicle Trust, and it's highlighted in red, and you go on down. And then I have a whole bunch of resolutions and minutes and how to link them together, and it's quite good. You even have an affidavit, a loan purpose, why you bought the loan, why you need the loan, a promissory note to pay back from one trust to the other trust, and it's all there. Everything you need, and a guarantee certificate, the receipt and how to do it, minute to issue a release of obligations, real estate property management minute, it's all there, folks. Everything you need to know about the management trust is here. I'll add more tonight or tomorrow. So we've been working very hard because we know that this event eventually is going to happen. And we want to get this stuff done. We want to get it in there and done. And there's also a tab called the Management Trust, which takes you to the same page I just mentioned. But I always list all the new stuff under the tab at the top that says new. So you know that every time we add something, there's a notation. So you can go to the new, and you say, okay, well, they added this, and you can go look at it. And, you know, if you just want to see what I've done lately, just go to that tab. So.
Okay.
What else do we want to talk about?
Well, we have another question here.
Perfect.
Well, good morning, Gary. How are you doing today?
I'm good. I woke up a little bit late, so I missed the first 10 minutes, but I'm trying to catch up. And good morning, Jim.
Good morning, and I will be yelling at you about that later. You should be sleeping on this Saturday's later.
thank you. The question I had, on the Mother Lode Trust, I know we don't have any internet access for that or anything. If we have money in our Mother Lode Trust, which I'm sure we all will, if the bank is giving us interest on our money that we have in the bank, will the money in the Mother Lode Trust get interest also, and is that okay to do, and where should we have that money director, that interest directed?
You just proved you showed up late, because we just discussed that, okay?
I'm guilty.
Now, you
I can listen to the replay.
No, that's okay. You do not, it needs to be repeated. You do not want to have the mother lode trust in a position where it's receiving interest. The way they get the interest is putting your money out into the market at risk and then paying you 0.5% when they take the rest of the 12% for them. It, you know, this is how they feed themselves. Remember now, Wells Fargo is probably one of the worst out there. They've paid $2 billion. That's with a B, billion, to the federal government in just fines in the last 12 years. $2 billion. Now, where did they get that $2 billion? They have interest-bearing accounts. People let them use their money. They go out there. They get 12, 15% on the money. They give you 1 or 2%, and that's where they make their money. Don't let them do that to you. Don't let them put your money at risk. So I don't have any – well, I take it back. I have one. I have one interest-bearing account as just as a test account, and I got $7.68 for last quarter in interest. Okay. I'm putting my money at risk for $7.68, so I'm changing that account, by the way. It was an experiment, and it failed terribly for them. Didn't do a whole heck of a lot for me either. So, no, you do not want to put any of your accounts at risk. If you want to make money, go out and make money. Go invest in something. You know, you control your risk if you control the money. If Wells Fargo is controlling your money, you don't control the risk. Remember, folks, as it stands today, when you put money in the bank, they own it. The only thing I got to give back to you is common stock, a certificate of common stock. Now, if they get to the point where they can't give you your money back, how much do you think that common stock's going to be worth?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to know that these banks are not your friend. They're a necessary evil, and I emphasize that word. So you want to make sure that you set your accounts up so you have the best possible security. And I don't trust the banks. That's why I call them banksters.
And Jim, I wholeheartedly agree. Even though we're reading things that whole banking system is going to be changed and they're just there to help us. It's like you said before, I'm here from the government and I'm going to help you. Does not make sense. They are going to take care of themselves first. That they're in business to make money.
Yep. And
very good. Thank
that.
You very much.
You're back.
Thanks, Gary. Well, thank believe you. It or not, our queue is empty. Anybody else have any questions? Star 6 to raise your hand. Excuse me.
Well, in the interim, while we're waiting, let's talk a bit more about the management trust and how it functions. There's multiple ways to do this. Carol's got her way of doing it. I've got my way of doing it. They're both perfectly good ways of doing it. I'm going to explain mine first. Then, Carol, you can explain your way. I think they're both excellent. The reason I'm doing mine my way is because I've already been doing it my way, and I just don't want to change midstream on this. So what I have done, and remember, this is private, folks. You really don't have to have a whole lot of documentation. I mean, I have a little three-ring binder, and I make notes in it. That's what I do. And then when it gets to a point where it needs to be a minute to the trust, I'll type it up, three-hole punch it, sign it, put it in the trust book. But what I do is I look at it this way, jokingly saying, me, myself, and I, we got together and had a trustee meeting, and we decided that we're going to put some certain currency dedicated to my vehicle trust, and I'm going to contract the motherlode trust to exchange it, and then part of the contract says once it's exchanged alert to the management trust, then I have an agreement from my real estate trust or vehicle trust, to the management trust, explaining what I want done. It's a one-pager. It's not even a full page. You can even handwrite this thing. It doesn't matter. It's private. The only reason you do this is because your successor trustees got to know what the heck you did so they can continue. You have to have a track record. I don't think you'll ever be ever drug into court on any of this stuff. It's just mostly for record keeping. Your successor trustees have to know what your intent was. And you should have your letter of wishes done also. Upon your demise, your certificates of beneficial interest go back to the trust. They'll be issued to the new successor trustees. And you need to leave them a letter of wishes, what you really intend to do with this thing. And hopefully, they'll follow through with what you had started. And, of course, they're going to put their own twist on some things as time goes on. My letter of wishes is done. My successor trustees, I have my best friend, which passed away last year, his son is one of them, and Carol is the other one. So Carol knows the trust. She can guide Michael. Michael's pretty good at this stuff, but not that good. So he's the young one that's going to take over. She's going to guide him initially. She'll get paid for that time. He's got instructions to give her $1.298 for her time. And that's how we do this. So my structure is very simple. I dedicate in my mind X amount of currency to this vehicle trust, and then I tell with a little piece of paper my motherlode trust to exchange it and pay it to the management trust, which has a small contract from the vehicle trust, the real estate trust, to it and tells it what to do. Then opens an account, and you remember, the management trust can have multiple accounts if you want that. It doesn't have to be one. You don't have to put all the money in one account. You can have an account. It's remember, you have a trust as one EI, but you have multiple checking accounts within it. You don't have to have a separate EI number for each one. Multiple accounts. I have multiple accounts in one of my trusts. So you can have individual debit cards for those accounts, and I do. And I use one of them is for my business stuff that I do with Carol and my stuff. The other one's my personal stuff, where I pay my bills, my personal bills. I buy my food with that card. Everything that I do outside of my business is done with that debit card on that account. All my business stuff that I do, buying paper and this, that, and the other thing, whatever I need, I do with my business card. So I can see everything I bought by going into my Wells Fargo account, and then I print that out every month. All right. It's a PDF, I download it, and I add it to my ledger for each one of my trusts. Well, accounting. It doesn't take me 30 minutes at the end of the month to do all that per trust. That's how I do it. Carol, how do you do it?
Pretty much the same way. You know, the management trust contracts with the mother load trust. Mother load trust funds it. And as you said, when you want to buy a vehicle, you get, you know, through paperwork, you get the money from the mother load, so the management trust can take care of the vehicle and the vehicle trust. And I'm losing my voice again. I am so sorry.
That's okay. I'll take over. So the only thing difference that sometimes Karen will do, she'll use certificates as collateral from trust to trust. I don't do that. It's just more work, and I just didn't cite it. I never did it to begin with. It's not a bad idea. I got to tell you, when you do a major issue, and when you're borrowing money, they're going to want collateral. Well, remember, trust to trust. So you can use one of the certificates of beneficial interest as collateral. So if you take it out of one binder, you make a note, you stick it in the other binder. It has collateral. When you're done with the collateral, you move it back from that binder, put it in the original binder, and the collateral is paid, is returned. The collateral is used to prove that there was a valid contract. You have to have consideration. My consideration is the contract because I used currency as my collateral and told this company, my mother load, to exchange it and put the money in my management trust. If you feel like you need to have collateral to justify your actions, then use your certificates of beneficial interest. You've got up to 100 units. You can make them in. You can have as many certificates you want at any denomination you want, and you can use those for collateral.
Mm-hmm. And let me just add one thing here on how a lot of this stuff works. A friend of mine back in Seattle recently had a stroke, and although she is recovering nicely, she does not feel that she has the ability to go in and exchange her currency. So my motherlode trust borrowed her currency. Let's just say it's a couple million dinar. My motherlode trust borrowed a couple million dollars dinar, went into exchanges, and for which, see, I'm losing my voice again. So borrows, and then it covers it with a certificate, as Jim mentioned. So when it comes time to exchange, the amount of money that the 2 million dinar is worth goes back to my friend's trust as payment for the loan. End of story. She writes a release, the whole thing. It's really pretty easy system.
Yep. And, you know, You can have your successor trustee come in and do things temporarily, not permanently. And right now I'm dealing with a client that is basically just about the same thing that Carol talked about, a little bit different injury, and was concerned because of the new, we might get our RV here. So I says, well, just activate your successor trustee. So I had him write a minute. He did it, and he'll take that minute to the bank when he goes there to prove that he has complete control over that trust, albeit temporarily, but he has complete control. So there's various ways to do this. This is all private. You can do just about any way you want to do it, with the exception of when you've got to go to somebody like a bank and prove you're going to have some documentation, and that minute had to be notarized, saying, well, the successor trustee has now taken over the trust indefinitely. That's all I said, indefinitely. And it will be for a specific amount of time, but not that long, I'm sure. But it has to be notarized.
Okay.
I think that's about all I can answer for that.
Okay. Well, we've got a couple questions now. So
okay.
I really apologize for my voice here. Okay, Jan, you're up. How are you today?
Hi, this is Jan. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, other than not being able to talk.
Yeah. I have a question. I was on your call here about a month and a half ago and mentioned that my trust is all nearly 9 years old. And when I first established my trust, I only had to put $10 on it, and we discussed it, and now how we should use like $21 of a silver certificate. So I have purchased that. I just haven't gone in and made any amendments. But anyway, the question I really have is, you mentioned that you should not have a credit or debit card attached to your, I only have the one trust, so I guess that's considered my mother lode trust. So my question is, I have also a checking account with a debit card and also a savings account in that trust. And you mentioned you shouldn't have a credit or debit card attached to the trust. Is there some way after this RV and I get an additional trust that I can take care of that issue? Or
Sure. If you're stuck with what you've got, you're stuck with what you've got. Remember, this is all private. You can call us or do an application and get a trust. We'll ship it out as soon as possible. And you rededicate that to be the mother lode trust, and you actually can just move the money over. You got to be careful when you do it. It could become considered, won't become, but could be considered a taxable event. But there are ways to get around that, and that is simply by having the proper documentation and proving that that was set up mentally, at least, if not physically, mm-hmm. and that the contract between the two supersedes the bank.
Okay.
And that's how you can do that. You can do that. I mean, it's not going to be that hard.
Okay. So I just didn't know if I needed, I don't recall what the reason is not to have a debit or credit card attached to your trust account. But anyway, I didn't know if I could just remove that from my one and only trust at the moment.
You can do that. You can say, okay, I'm going to dedicate this to be my mother lode trust.
Right.
And you get a secondary trust, and you take the cancel debit card and the savings accounts, probably not necessary in that thing. Just cancel those and open your new account, and now that becomes your management account. And then that one that you have right now would eventually be your mother lode trust. And the reason we don't want you to have anything attached to the mother lode trust is that you put it at risk, and that's the one you're counting on for the rest of your life.
Right.
So
exactly.
We don't want you to put that at risk.
Okay, that sounds like a good alternative, just to cancel both of those accounts. And I'm going to be opening new accounts anyway, so I can just cancel my current accounts, and then that'll leave my mother lode trust. Well, I guess I'd have to make sure the bank is aware. Well, I can take care of that.
Yeah, they'll work with you.
Yeah, right.
Here's the deal, folks. You'll love this statement. Here's the deal. they'll work with you. They want your money.
That's right.
They'll do anything you want. They want your money in their bank. So they'll work with you.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the only thing I think is the reason they want your money is their bottom line shows they have that asset, even though they can't really touch it. But they will work. You get to set the rules of this transaction, not them.
Yeah. Okay. So
and you got another question?
Yes. When I talked to you a month and a half ago, whenever it was, you said that you were going to go in and make some kind of comments and new or make some kind of statement or whatever about my problem with not having my original creator available to in order to use my silver certificates.
You don't have to do that. You just simply amend the trust with a minute. You can handwrite it and say that after further consideration, we are amending the trust and increasing the amount of exchange to 21 lawful dollars. Now, here's an interesting thing, folks. If we actually do have the new United States notes coming out that are gold back, you don't need to do that 21 silver certificates anymore because you're actually going to be using currency that's gold backed. And the only reason we use the 21 lawful dollars is because the Constitution for the United States says that any debt in excess of $20, you're entitled to a jury trial. Well, a jury trial is, in essence, a common law trial because you have the right to educate the jury. You have the right to talk to the jury, not the judge. You talk to the jury. You have the opportunity to produce the information to show the jury that you're right, the plaintiff is wrong. If you're going before a judge, he's prejudiced. I guarantee you, he's prejudiced. Mm-hmm. So that's why we increase it from $10 another consideration to $21 another consideration. We want you to have the option of having a jury trial. It's not necessary. If you feel comfortable in front of a magistrate, go for it. But we want to give you every option out there, and that's why we changed that.
Well, thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay. And hang on, get over here. And Jay is next. How are you today, Jay?
I'm good, thanks. Hope everybody's doing well. Yeah, I just need a couple of clarifications. My impression was that the trusts were all pretty much the same and load once. So when you talk about moving money to the, you know, management trust, I thought that was a one-time thing. Is that not correct?
It's not. Remember,
okay.
There's a lot of information out there, but these are what they call business trusts.
Yes.
Business doesn't just make a deposit one time. I run my trust. They're a business trust. They receive and they distribute money weekly. They're a business trust. They're an entity. They're irrevocable, meaning nobody else can tell you what to do with them. But as far as the law says, and I'm concerned, it's a business trust. I'm running a business.
Okay, so you can move money in and out, you're saying?
Sure. I do it all the time. Yeah.
Okay. I got that impression previously. The other thing is there anything on the website that explains certificates a little more? It kind of glazes over whenever you start mentioning. It makes sense, but I'm not sure how I would actually use it. You know, it sounds like monopoly money. You know.
Well, there is, and I'll make sure. I'll go look at that. I made a note here to go in and see that. But basically, if you understand a corporation has stock certificates, stocks are traded on the New York Stock Exchange. And by the way, the Carol, what's the name of that? Mesabi. The Mesabi Trust, it trades not stock certificates because it's a trust. It exchanges or trades certificates, just like what we do. It's a public trust. It's been on the New York Stock Exchange for over 100 years. Okay, so a certificate of beneficial interest is just another way of saying it's a stock certificate. It's just called something different because it's a different classification of enterprise. Okay, so the certificates of beneficial interest in this case allow you to receive disbursements equal or unequal from the trust, meaning that you can pay Joe more than you pay Bob if you're making a disbursement. And there's just a way of showing, because when you created the trust, you exchanged certain amount of property into the trust, and for that, you were issued the certificates. Just like if you bought stock in a company, they give you a stock certificate. If you exchanged money or assets into the trust, you received certificates. They're certificates of beneficial interest because you're the beneficiary of that trust because of the stock certificate, only to the point of your share. We usually issue two. They're 50 units apiece. So if it's one person, he gets two. If it's two people, they each get 50. You can break that down to any way you want. So once you have those, you want to give some certificates of beneficial interest to your kids. You then write void on your certificates. You reissue them back to the trust. You can buy some more certificate paper. Then you issue however you want, up to and including a total amount of 100. So if you want to give two kids 25 apiece, and your wife wants 25 and you want 25, you just take the 250 units, put them back in the trust, print four certificates, with one with each person's name on it, and issue them. Now they're entitled to 25% or whatever you decide to pay them of the corpus of the trust or of any disbursement that you decide you want to make. That's how that works.
Okay.
Carol, do you want to add to that? Carol's not with us right now. She's having a tough time.
No, I'm right here. I'm sorry. I'm not having a good time right here. What did you say, Jim? I'm sorry.
Well, we're talking about the beneficial interest. I was talking about you reissue the certificates back. And then if I say there's a disbursement, I just want to know if you want to add anything to that.
No.
That's good. I just had one other comment. I mean, you can insure money in a mother-in-law trust. I mean, you can insure it in any number of ways. So I don't see why you'd forego millions of dollars worth of interest. To me, it doesn't make sense. I know what you're saying. It's very safe, but, it's like safety versus liberty,
Yeah, and I understand. People will want to have the interest, and they feel secure in it. Go for it. Me, I don't feel secure in the banks at all until they change. So, and yes, you can buy an insurance policy, but you can spend a lot of that interest you made buying that insurance policy. For me, I want to put my money to work in specific areas. I don't want the bank to be my I don't want to be beholding the bank. I don't want the bank involved in my finances, other than to be the harbor of it temporarily. I will put it to work out there where I feel comfortable. That's how I do my stuff. And it's however you want to do it. And I agree with you. If you want the government to make millions of dollars, go for it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. It just seems like a lot of money to just forego, there'd be a way, maybe you take a little less, but you somehow secure it a little bit more. And there's probably a trade-off in there somewhere, is all I'm saying. But anyway,
I will assure you that, and pardon me for interrupting you, but I will assure you that when your money is in that bank, your wealth managing entity, whoever you use, will show you a lot better ways than let it sit there for 2 or 3%. And they'll guarantee it, and they'll insure it on top of that.
Oh,
I'm talking about for the average person right now, they want to have an interest bearing, go ahead. But when we're talking $7,500, $200, $300 million, they're going to show you better ways.
Yeah.
I got friends that have that kind of wealth, and they chuckle at me from time to time because, I'm talking about this stuff, and they've got things they can't even tell me about. They're on non-disclosures all the time. And they say, well, when you get to our point in wealth, you won't have to worry about it because those people will show you the way to do it, and they'll insure it to guarantee the return and the principal. Now, trust me, they make good money doing it. So anyway, and you want to get to the point where your advisors are making money to advise you, not the bank making money to use you. And that's my take on that.
Mm-hmm. Anyhow, I agree.
It's just my personal opinion.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet. I agree with what you're saying. Okay.
Thank you, Jay. Okay, here's another one. Veronica, how are you today?
Hi, Carol and Jim. I'm fine, thank you. I called, it might be a little redundant because I came in late, but I just want to know, to move money from the mother lode trust to another trust, the procedure is writing a check or just transferring it, or what is the procedure? I know we're going to have these things that say that the money is clean and whatever, but just how do you do it? Is there a limit or restriction as to how much you can transfer from one trust to the other at a time? Just wanted to know that.
No, there's no limit, and the best way to do that is to go to your wealth manager and sit in front of them, whoever that may be, and move the money from your whatever account to the other account. I don't like doing anything online. I do some stuff online right now, but that's only because I don't have a whole lot of money in that particular bank. But when you get to the amount of money we're talking, you want to have FaceTime with your wealth managers, and you want to educate them on how you want to run your business. And I highly recommend that you go sit down with them in the bank and you do that. I'm going to tell my banker I don't want anybody to know about this mother lode trust. I don't want it on the bank screens. I don't want the tellers to be able to see it. I don't want any debit cards to it. I don't want any interest on it. I want to protect this. And then I will go in and put the money into my investment accounts and then go do my investments. But I physically will show up, and I have to be there in person to transfer the money. And I'm doing that because I don't have a wife, I don't have any kids, and I'm relying on just me. And I want to make sure it's me that does this. And if anybody else is doing this, then there's something went wrong with my trust, and it's probably being stolen. That's how I'm going to manage mine. So if there's any money without me being in front of them, then there's a problem. And they'll know that because I'll tell them, I'm the only person that can move this money. If somehow the money's getting moved, I need to be alerted right away.
Absolutely.
So then, review this. You said originally that as far as the trust, we are to go to the bank before and open it rather than wait for the time and then say this is where I want the money sent to. Because I understood, basically, and the information might have been wrong, that we need to not put any old money into the account but wait for the new money that's coming in, and that might be a problem. What is your take on that?
Well, I have multiple accounts right now. They're using the standard banking system. But when the money hits, I will walk in with a brand new trust, with a brand new EI number. It's all set up. I said, I haven't taken to the bank. And that will be the brand new, the Jim Knox 2.0. We're going to be, that's what everybody's going to be. You're going to be the new you because the old you is going to be fading away because you're moving to a new step in life. And your job, if you got to take it seriously, your new job is to manage this wealth to the betterment of you, your family, and mankind. And so we got to take it really, really serious. And I do, trust me, I do. I joke about it on the calls and stuff, but I take it extremely serious. And that's why I'm telling people this is how I'm doing my stuff because I feel it, for me, is the best way. And I don't care about making extra little money here and there, but the previous guy, I agree with him. I totally agree with him. But my comfort zone is not there. But 75 to 80% of the people will go with his route, and I don't blame them. It's good money. They're going to pay you good money. But you got to be sure that you're protected. And you can buy an insurance policy on it. They're expensive, but you can get them. But Carol and I have got other ideas on how we want to do things. And Carol and I are going to talk together here in the next couple of days. We may have something we want to bring to everybody's attention. And we'll just leave it at that. I'm not going to commit to anything right now, but I'm going to talk to her about that. And what we'll do is we'll simply send out probably a last email that links you to a site to go to, and you may like what you see, you may not. I don't know. But that's how you do it, Ronnie.
So, Jim, this is it. As far as going to the bank, do we go with the trust and no bank account and open it there? Because we might go to a bank that we want to open an account somewhere else. Like, for example, I've been hearing that HD, whatever that is, a good bank. I have Wells Fargo, but I'm just saying, do we go with a trust that is that has no bank account, or do we go with a bank account even though it's not, it's new? It's new in the sense that we're not doing any business with it as yet, up to that point. So what
it doesn't
do we
matter. You can do anything you want. That's the whole idea of the trust. You're the person that gets to call all the shots, not the government. I have a trust right now that I'm using that has been for all purposes around. You can call it my mother-load trust. I've been using it for a couple of years. I have a new trust because I don't want to commingle. If you want to use your existing trust, you take the cash, you have them create a brand new account within that trust. You wipe everything out of the other accounts and move to that new account.
Uh-huh.
And then you have them open a third account. You take that money, move to the third account, and you wipe all three of those previous accounts, wipe them out, get them out of the bank. They don't exist, all new numbers. Now you've got a new slate. You can use an existing trust, but you're going to be issued new checking accounts, new debit cards, new everything. So you can do it. Depends on what you want to do.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. So I just want to just make sure that I'm hearing right. Specifically, I go to Wells Fargo, and that's where the transaction is taking place. But when I go there, my eyes are on another bank. And the thing is, do I open the account before I get to Wells Fargo, or do I, or do I just wait and then But then again, we'd have a problem as far as transferring the money later. So, what do we do here, Jim? Just be specific for me, because this is a new walk for me, and I just want to know.
Well, it's up to you. I mean, I'm telling you how I will do it. There's no law that says you got to do it anyway. You can do it any way you want to do it. I'm going to go with Wells Fargo initially. I may not stay with Wells Fargo. If I decide to move, I'll go open an account at another bank. I'll move the money over to that bank, or I may have multiple banks. I probably will have multiple banks, and they won't all be in America. Initially, they'll be in America. But
so,
long term,
okay,
I'll be somewhere around the globe.
So do I change, I mean, can you change the mother load trust then to another location and put another mother load, put the trust that's supposed to be the mother load in another bank? Can you do it that way or no?
Of course, you just pick it up, move it. You just go to the other bank with your same trust, open an account, move the money into it. Close the original trust.
I didn't know. Okay. Thank you for telling me. I didn't know you could do that, but that's good. That's good. Mm-hmm.
Remember, Veronica, you control this. They don't. You can do anything you want to do. It's your money. They got to do what you want to do. It's not the other way around anymore. You do what you want to do. They want your money. They'll do anything you want them to do. You just got to be comfortable with whatever you did make your decision on. They're going to accommodate you. It's not going to be the other way around anymore. We are in control.
Yeah.
Not the bank.
I like the fact that we're stepping up to another level, and sometimes it's a matter of getting used to it. But I appreciate the information. I do. Thank you.
Okay, no problem. You bet, Veronica.
Thanks, Veronica. Well, everybody, it's about a quarter after the hour here, so we should probably sign off. Excuse me again. Thanks to all of you for your time and attention. My name is Carol Worlius. My number is 425-820-8090. I'm in the Central Time Zone and available between 10 and 6. My email is info@indicatorinformation.com. Jim, you want to give your contact info?
Sure. My name is Jim Knox. I'm in the West Coast. I'm in Salem, Oregon. The best number to reach me is probably my home line. I'm going to give you a couple numbers here. 503-583-6791. My 800 number is 866-341-6907. I work from 9 to 6, Monday through Friday. I do not work weekends. You can send me emails on the weekend. I probably won't respond, with exception of today. I do have other things I do, and I have my own companies, and I'm busy running those too. So bear with me on that, but those are the hours I can work. So with that said, I think we'll bid everybody adieu. Carol, do you have any last comments?
Well, have a happy and safe weekend, everybody. Go RV. We want those motorhomes, right?
That's
Take
right.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.